Let's pray. Pray before we begin. Lord, thank you for this time. And open our hearts and our eyes and our minds to hear from you personally. In Jesus' precious name. Do you actually think it is a perfect kind of day for the atmosphere I hope you'll feel? Because we'll be diving into something quite interesting to begin. There was a storm brewing. For everyone at the time, this was becoming quickly apparent. And it didn't take a genius to see it. Throughout history, empires rise and they fall. And once again, a moment like this was arriving. In this case, power in the ancient world was changing hands. And there were violent aftershocks to follow. After all, human history is colored by violence and blood. And this was never more obvious than within the wars that were waged by many of the great powers in the past. You might be saying at this point, I expect this to be a talk from the Bible. So surely one of these great powers that I'll be talking about is Israel. You'd be mistaken. Now certainly Israel has a very important part to play. And for what we're discussing, Israel will be at the center. However, let us first place ourselves in the right time and the right place. In the area we now know as the Middle East, well, it was a boiling pot of different nations and powers, all fighting for power and control. Perhaps you may remember the story of Israel itself, and we'll go there first, forming as a nation in this area. In the time of the Exodus, the land of Canaan was taken by the Israelites after they exited from Egypt by God's power. And under Joshua, the Israelites claimed the land of Canaan. A time of much unrest followed, but eventually the nation became a kingdom when Saul and then David became kings of Israel and were the first kings of this new kingdom. In this land, this kingdom rose to great heights of wealth and acclaim under Solomon. But this was not long-lived. Soon Israel fractured and broke. And under Solomon's son Rehoboam, Israel became two kingdoms, the northern kingdom called Israel and the southern kingdom called Judah. And while these kingdoms were not small, they were far from the greatest powers of the time, which became quickly evident within the next few centuries. As the northern kingdom of Israel was plagued for a long line of unfaithless kings, almost all who turned their eyes from God, the greatest empire potentially the world had ever seen, was slowly starting to form. During the same time as Israel fractured and fractured, the Assyrian Empire was expanding into the greatest empire the world had ever seen. And their empire soon reached the borders of Israel. Quickly enough, the northern kingdom of Israel was ransacked and destroyed, its people driven into exile. And before 700 BC, the northern kingdom was completely gone. Now, with all empires, there are ups and there are downs. And while the Assyrian Empire rose, soon they too would start to fall. And the Chaldeans, or maybe more popularly and recognizably known as the Babylonians, they, with great vengeance, were starting to rise. And it was quickly clear that Assyria, the empire, was collapsing, but the Babylonians were the ones wresting power from this old empire. It is at the boundary of this great clash of powers, the ripples and shockwaves, as the greatest power of the time changed hands, that as the Assyrian Empire fell and the Babylonian Empire rose, that we ask a simple question. Where is Israel in all of this? The northern kingdom is completely destroyed. And what remains is the southern kingdom, Judah, hanging on, barely, just a tiny, small empire on the side. There is, however, a serious problem. Judah is not on stable ground. While it certainly has lasted longer than the northern kingdom, Judah is in the eye of the storm. It, too, has had its fair share of kings, some of which were good, but the majority of which had also turned their backs on God. And as Babylon seized control of the power previously owned by the Assyrians, it almost seemed inevitable that something was coming. Change was in the horizon. Babylon was coming for Judah. Looking into the distance, dust clouds were approaching what still remained of the kingdom of Israel. The storm was coming. It is at this point we turn to the book we'll be starting to read. The book of the prophet Habakkuk in the Old Testament. Into the world of Habakkuk we move, and through his eyes we shall try to see something of just what we are meant to think, what we are meant to do when the storm is approaching. What questions do we ask when the storm arrives? From Habakkuk chapter 1, the oracle that Habakkuk the prophet saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? And why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise, so the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. Now, we don't know the exact time that Habakkuk spoke, but some things become quickly clear. Israel has its own serious problems, and the prophet Habakkuk sees those problems very clearly. While war rages outside of Israel and violence and iniquity thrive, the same is true within Israel as well. And this is what Habakkuk sees and brings before God. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? This is a cry for help. But here, it's not actually against the enemy outside the gates. The Babylonians have not yet made their plans to attack Israel. Instead, the cry is actually a cry for help from within. While Israel certainly has issues that are starting to appear and grow from nations outside, such as the growing Babylonian Empire, the extent of their rottenness within is far, far worse. Like an infected wound, oh, you can see the issues on the outside, the bleeding and the oozing. The inside is where all the damage is. Beneath the surface, destruction is coming, Israel. Again and again, the so-called people of God had turned their backs. They did not listen. They did not listen to their God's voice, and they have not kept his covenant. Israel is now plagued with the consequences of their actions. Within the city, as we hear from the plea of Habakkuk, destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. This isn't from Babylon. This is from within. Through the words of Habakkuk, we too see a snapshot of the state of Israel, a people divided, torn apart by their sin, a place where destruction and strife are commonplace, and sin seems to reign over righteousness. The very next verse tells us, so the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth, for the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. Simply put, the word of God had been forgotten, left behind, ignored. The commandments given to Moses by God all those years ago were paralyzed without the power to act or speak. In a time gone by, it would be the leaders of Israel, the kings, the prophets, the priests, who would be the arms and legs of the law. They would carry out their responsibility to call Israel into action, to call Israel to obedience, to obey God's voice and keep his covenant. Yet as the shepherds of God's flock turned their backs to God in disobedience also, so too did the flock. As we look through Israel's history, kings who still honored God were soon outnumbered by kings who raged and warred against God, who rejected God, turning Israel to worship idols and gods of other nations. And priests made sacrifice to these gods rather than the God of their forefathers. All the while, false prophets proclaimed that all was well, that Israel would not suffer, that there would be peace. All the while, the sin of the people was quickly leading to their destruction. From Jeremiah 6, verse 13, we read, for from the least to the greatest of them, everyone is greedy for unjust gain. And from prophet to priest, everyone deals falsely. They have healed the wound of my people lightly, saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. The wicked surround the righteous, So justice goes forth perverted. Into this world we are flung. Into this world we see from the eyes of the prophet Habakkuk. Clearly, behind the facade of peace, behind the facade of this false confidence that everything is fine and well and good, beneath the band-aid, hiding the wound, the infection spreads. And nothing can hide the poison that's spreading inwards. For Israel, the wounds were deep and deadly, and the poison, the sin of the nation, could no longer be hidden. We live in a day and age where we can sometimes be blind to injustice, to things that don't seem to be right. Yet some days, if we're not distracted, we'll see a video or open the news or hear a story about something that just doesn't seem right, doesn't seem fair. After all, most of us are blessed to be in such a stable place and time that we are hidden to injustice and rarely see serious injustice, certainly firsthand. Yet wherever we look and zoom in, great injustice has plagued the course of human history to this very day. In this day and age, we can confidently speak out against the terrible injustices of the past, like slavery or the very idea of owning a slave. Yet a couple of hundred years ago, the slave trade was not just common, but by many not even considered to be something that's wrong, as was true also for the treatment of women, of children, of people of different races, of different classes. Now, none of these issues have disappeared off the face of the earth. But what I want to focus on is that to us, in our society, in our environment too, perhaps for everyone specifically here in a Christian environment, certainly, there is more and more of a sense of a moral clarity, a sense that some things are really clearly right and some things are really clearly wrong. We live in a time and place where supporting some of these things that are wrong just seems like insanity. No one here would ever even think of supporting something like slavery today. Yet, if I put you into a time machine, into a different place and a different time, the person who's going insane might be you. Imagine being placed in a world where all the things I mentioned before that we assume are clearly right and fair are turned upside down, and you suddenly become the only sane person in an insane world. Like Habakkuk thousands of years before, you might say the same things. The law is paralyzed. Justice never goes forth. The wicked surround the righteous. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry for help? You look around and all of a sudden everyone, no one seems to be sane. They all believe this insanity that something such as slavery or any of the other iniquities of the past, all of a sudden right? How could this be? The Habakkuk, like a sane man in an insane world, he knows God's standard. He knows the law and the commandments. He knows what is right and holy in the eyes of God. And he looks around and he sees an insane world, so full of injustice and iniquity. Israel, so full of sin and rebellion against God. And in his exasperation, in his frustration, in his anger, in his uncertainty, he does all he can do. He cries out to God, Lord, do you not hear? Will you not save? Do you look upon sin and do nothing? We now read the Lord's answer. Look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swift to devour. They all come for violence. And their faces forward. They gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress. They pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on. Guilty men whose own might is their God. Now, this might not be the answer you expected. No, you haven't read this wrong. It is as you are hearing. Look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if I told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that is, those Babylonians I mentioned earlier. God responds, but is not the message that we might expect. I am doing a work you would not believe. I'm raising the Chaldeans up. Why would you do that? The great empire that was rising and taking power from the Assyrians, why would you raise them up, God? That bitter and hasty nation, dreaded and fearsome, who come for violence, swift to devour, whose own might is their God? A brutal and savage nation. This is not a nation of justice, but a nation whose injustice was clear. Like the Assyrians before them, they were violent and brutal, seizing all things for their own gain, whose own might was their God. What is this response? Is our God not the God of love and mercy? How can this be the answer to Habakkuk's questions? And as we ask these questions, Habakkuk asks the same questions to God. Let's listen in to his response to God. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? You shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. You who are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no rule. He brings all of them up with a hook. He drags them out of his net. He gathers them in his dragnet. So he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and makes offerings to his dragnet. For by them he lives in luxury and his food is rich. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? I will take stand at my watchpost, station myself on the tower, and look out to see what he will say to me, and what I will answer concerning my complaint. Like us, Habakkuk is confused. You who are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? You, God, who are so pure and holy and good, God of righteousness, without sin, how could you possibly remain silent as this happens? As the evil of the Babylonians, who worship their own strength as their God, who with violence and evil destroy other nations, and now come to destroy Israel, Habakkuk asks, how can a God like you see this and let it go? There are a few things we might be useful to observe first about how Habakkuk speaks with God. Notice how Habakkuk asks his question. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. Even in his confusion, his questions before God, Habakkuk remains grounded, rooted, a tree planted by streams of water, in who he knows God to be. He asks God these questions, not from a place of pride, but from humility. Even in his confusion and doubt and uncertainty, to Habakkuk, the Lord is my God, my Holy One. Beautifully intimate, Habakkuk draws near as a child to a parent, as a servant to his perfect master. His own mind races with confusion, yet he knows his God remains the same, and he makes it clear in what he says, everlasting, holy, the rock, the one with all power, with the earth. At the same time, we see this relationship between Habakkuk and God is real. Because Habakkuk is unafraid to ask, to open up and pour out the questions on his heart. He does not question God's character, but he does question his own understanding, and he lays it with full honesty before God. This is not a relationship that we might see in some books or movies where there's a tyrant king and his subjects are so afraid to speak. All they can say is, yes, my lord, that's whatever the king says is right in their eyes. No, this isn't what Habakkuk does. Habakkuk is not an actor on a stage, pretending to be a character in a play. His relationship with God is genuine, and so are the questions on his heart. First, we start with humility. Habakkuk never forgets the character of God. He also doesn't ask from a place of pride, looking down at God. Instead, he looks up. He asks knowing his own limits and knowing that God is unlimited. Secondly, he asks honestly. He does not hide his thoughts and feelings. In fact, there's no point in hiding. This is a God who knows your innermost feelings and thoughts. While you can hide your questions and your doubts and your fears from other people, and even from yourself, there is no hiding from God. He knows your heart far greater than you do. And for Habakkuk, because his relationship with God is personal and is real, he is able to ask without cynicism or uncertainty about if God will actually answer him. Which leads to the third and final part of how Habakkuk speaks with God. Finally, the third element of Habakkuk's relationship is found at the end of the passage. He questions and lays his heart out before God. And at the start of the chapter, the second chapter, he says this: I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. The third step for Habakkuk is faith. I will stand, I will look, I will listen, I will wait. Simple, clear, pure faith. I have asked humbly and honestly my questions before God, and now I will wait and I will listen with a confidence in a God that will reply, whatever that reply might end up looking like. For Habakkuk, God is my God, my Holy One. What joy is it to have such a relationship with God, that even as the storm approaches, the Babylonian army rages forth, approaches from the distance with great power and violence, and the destruction of Israel is all but guaranteed, Habakkuk can still personally, faithfully trust in the goodness, faithfulness, the sovereignty of his God. Even as the storm approaches, he waits and he listens, and his faith is in a God that will respond. I would ask the same question to everyone here. Your relationship with God, just who is God to you? Is God far away and distant, unapproachable, someone you can never speak to? Is God just the God of Sundays that you occasionally think about when the week comes along? Is God the God of emergencies who you only turn to and ask for help when things aren't going so well? Is God the God of offerings who you try to please by trying to do good things, as many good things as you can, to please him? Or is God to you who God is to Habakkuk? O Lord, my God, my Holy One, holy, just, righteous, merciful, loving, real, one who can bring all, you can bring all questions before and all anxieties and doubts and pain before, one who you know is faithful, one who you have faith in and believe will answer all your innermost questions, even if the answer isn't what you're looking for. As we turn back to Habakkuk, the question now becomes for us, how will God respond? After all, we look at Habakkuk and I think the questions he asks are completely genuine and completely valid, justified questions to bring before a holy God. So let us read. You who are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he. Habakkuk asks, God, in all your goodness and righteousness and holiness, how can you look upon wrong, evil, and allow it to pass? You've made mankind like the fish of the sea, that is to say, defenseless, helpless against the net of the Babylonians. The Babylonians, they come, they take, they destroy, they kill. Their wickedness swallows up the righteous. How, Lord, can you watch that evil and allow it? He recognizes that Israel, they certainly must be punished for their actions. He knows that. They must be judged for their blatant unrighteousness and their disobedience to God. Yet he also asks, why in this manner, in this method, by the Babylonians? Why is it the Babylonians you have ordained as judgment, established for reproof? Let us read God's response. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. God hears Habakkuk's call, and he tells him, listen closely. You've asked the question faithfully. I will answer. Write it down so both you and others can hear it. And wait for it, what I'm telling you. It will happen. When God answers, he does not lie, and he will answer. It is our place to wait and to trust. God is with us. And even if the response seems slow, it will come. God will provide. Now we read God's response. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by his faith. Moreover, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who is never at rest. His greed is as wide as Sheol. Like death, he has never enough. He gathers himself for himself all nations and collects as his own all peoples. Shall not all these take up their taunt against him with scoffing and riddles for him and say, woe to him who heaps up what is not his own, and for how long, and loads himself with pledges? Will not your debtors suddenly arise and those awake who will make you tremble, and you will be spoiled for them? Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the peoples shall plunder you, for the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. God's response starts in chapter 2 with a very clear message. Babylon enters the courtroom and God finds Babylon guilty. Babylon is an arrogant man who is never at rest, filled with greed and arrogance. God makes it very clear to Habakkuk, Babylon is guilty, and most certainly they shall be punished for their crimes. And the people who they have gathered and crushed and destroyed, they will be taunting and scoffing and mocking from both sides. Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own, because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the peoples shall plunder you. God makes it very clear. Babylon, they will receive their reward. For their greed and their sin, they shall pay for their crimes. And as you keep reading, one word keeps appearing over and over throughout the rest of chapter 2. Woe to him. Woe to Babylon. The higher they go, the higher they rise, the harder they shall fall. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high. For this you have forfeited your life. For the stone will cry out from the wall. Woe to him who builds a town with blood. Woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. You'll have your fill of shame instead of glory. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake. Woe has a very simple meaning. Great sorrow. Those who do as the Babylonians have done, their reward for their actions will be a great misery. And what a terrible fate when we realize this is the guarantee from a God who does not lie. Here is the first part of God's response to Habakkuk, a message that answers that question very simply. Do you think I am blind to evil? Certainly not. God, who is holy, God who is right, God who is just, shall certainly bring judgment and justice upon Babylon. God is far from blind to evil. For all evil, judgment is coming. And God, who is the great judge over all sin and all evil, guarantees it. Yet, there is also a second component to God's response to Habakkuk that requires us to look very closely beyond just the time and the place. Certainly for Habakkuk, nothing may have felt larger than the threat of Babylon. And history books tell us very clearly he had every right to be afraid. What was written here, that the Babylonians would be raised up and with great violence destroy what remained of the nation of Israel, that Judah would be defeated and destroyed, all of this came to pass. God kept the promise he made in his first response, and God's guarantee that even for Babylon, whose empire soared to the greatest heights the earth had ever seen to that point, they too would fall, and not just fall, they would be crushed, like the nations they had crushed. This too came to pass. When the Persians came, the next great empire, and as the centuries passed, great powers came and great powers went, and all the way through, human history was painted with the brush of violence and death and sin. While Habakkuk was asking God about what he would do about the evil nation of Babylon, who were to be raised to bring judgment upon Israel, there was a bigger question hiding beneath the surface. How long, O Lord, will you look upon evil? How long will you look upon sin? How long will you not save? How long, O Lord? In the lives we live, one may think of our lives as something of a weather forecast. Some days are bright and sunny, perfect weather, not too hot, not too cold. Other days, it's a little cold, a little chilly. And other times, you see the storm approaching. And you know, as those clouds gather and the sky begins to darken, that the storm is coming. And you know that when those clouds arrive, it won't just rain, it will pour. And the clouds will grow thick and thicker. And the sky will become darker and darker. And soon enough, you'll be in the middle of the storm. Maybe that storm looks to you like something you see when you look around you. You look at the state of the world and you say, this injustice and sin I see around me, how can this be? Maybe it's in the life you live, with the struggles you encounter, the pain you run into. Maybe it's when you look within yourself and you see the sin, the doubt, the thoughts, the idle thoughts that say you aren't good enough, or the anxieties and all the pressures from the world around you that crush and crush you. Maybe, like Habakkuk, you are calling out because there is a question that plagues your heart, that makes you toss and turn and scatters your mind and your heart. Or perhaps you don't even have a God who you can call to. God is not God to you. You don't have that personal relationship. You have no one to cry out to in your moments of pain, in your moments of darkness, on those stormy days. To everyone in the storm, God has a very clear and powerful message. And the same message applies to everyone. Our God is a God of love and of mercy. And in him is salvation, not just for a moment, but for an eternity. In the midst of this chapter, where great woe is promised upon Babylon, a different promise shines a light through the storm. Words from God, speaking not just to Habakkuk, but to all people, to all nations at all times, even as just judgment is promised to Babylon. We receive the answer to this question. Where is God within the storm? Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Behold, is it not from the Lord of hosts that peoples labor merely for fire and nations weary themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. even as man labors and builds his own towns and cities and empires, behold, the work of man is nothing before the power of the Lord. People labor and nations weary for nothing, because nothing belongs to them. The Lord is Lord over all of the earth. Everything is his, for the earth will be filled with his the knowledge of his glory, the glory of the Lord, as the oceans, the waters cover the sea. Look, behold, a time is coming. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord. Right now, nations rage and fight for control, but man has no power. Man owns nothing. Man knows nothing. And a time is coming when all that man has fought for, is fighting for, will fight for, will be worth nothing before the glory of the Lord. This is the power and the majesty and the glory of our God. Do you choose to follow this God? Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, to a silent stone, arise. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Our God is living, breathing, powerful. Not a creation of man, not a wooden thing that has no life, or a stone that has no voice, or any other human creation. None of the things the world follows that we can be tempted to follow. Human creations of power and money and whatever humans can devise as false idols to follow, or we build for ourselves to distract ourselves from the anxieties and the doubts of the day. Whatever in your life that troubles you or weighs on your heart, ask yourself this. Is this more living or more powerful than the living God before whom the whole world is silent? Our God is the God who calls the whole world to be silent. Our God is the God who calms the storm. We now return to the start of the chapter. The start of God's second response, but hidden away is a direct lesson from God. Hidden away beneath all this discussion about what will happen to the Babylonian Empire, the Babylonian nation, a profound gospel message is revealed. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by his faith. Behold, the Babylonians, they are puffed up, arrogant, filled with pride. But they are contrasted with the second group, the righteous. But the righteous shall live by faith. So far, we have been reminded of the power and the glory of God. His character, our God, is a God of justice, of righteousness, filled with power. All work by human hands is nothing before him, and the whole world is silent before him, with nothing to bring, nothing to say. The knowledge of his glory will fill the earth, and he is a God who fulfills promises. He does not look idly upon evil, and he will carry out his righteous justice. Our faith is in this God, a God of love and mercy, in whom we have an even greater promise than the guarantee of justice. We read from Galatians chapter 3, verse 11. Now it is evident that no one is justified before God by the law, for the righteous shall live by faith. Several centuries later, Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, uses these words from the book of Habakkuk to tell us clearly the heart of the gospel message. No one is justified before God by the law. All are condemned. None are righteous. From Romans 3, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Yet our God, a God of mercy, a God of love, has transformed what would be a tragic, woeful story into a story of joy. It would be woe to us if in our sin we had to face the punishment that we deserve before the righteous glory of this righteous, good, just, powerful God. But we've been given a way out, a way out of the storm. The righteous shall live by faith. Faith in the God before whom the whole world is silent. Around 600 years after Habakkuk, there appeared a man within the nation of Israel, which... Now Israel, after several centuries, was now under the fist of a new great empire, the Romans. Israel as a nation was waiting. Waiting for a Messiah, a king, one who would lead them out of Roman reign, with the hope that perhaps they would be restored as a nation, restored to even greater heights than under the reign of David and of Solomon. Unbeknownst to the nation of Israel, God's plan was so much bigger, so much greater than just following the same old story of building nation after nation, empire after empire, rise and fall. It involved this man Jesus. Now, Jesus was with his disciples one day, and they were aiming to cross the Sea of Galilee. Now, Jesus had already started teaching in this region, and he spoke like no one before him and no one since. He spoke as one with true authority. But just who is this man Jesus? Let's read from Matthew 8, verse 23. And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great storm on the sea, so that the boat was being swamped by the waves. But he was asleep. And they went and woke him, saying, Save us, Lord, we are perishing. And he said to them, Why are you afraid, O you of little faith? Then he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. And the men marveled, saying, What sort of man is this, that even winds and sea obey him? Our faith is in a God before whom the whole world is silent. Our God is the God who calms the storm. Whether in good times or in times of trouble, in sunny days or in the middle of the raging storm, our faith is in the God of righteousness and justice, a God of love, God of mercy. In Jesus, we find every part man and every part God. And in him, we place our faith. And in him alone, our faith is counted to us as righteousness. Look upon Jesus. All of God embodied in man. What a miracle. How extraordinary that Jesus, who held all the authority of God, before whom the whole world is silent, before whom the winds and the storms were calm, that he would come down, become a man, and go to the cross for us. Jesus gave his life for us to destroy sin once and for all. And in his resurrection, we share that victory. How long, O Lord, will you look upon evil and sin? How long will you not save? These questions have been answered at the cross. Our Lord has won for us ultimate victory, complete victory, that by faith alone we can be counted righteous before the throne of God. Let's pray to close. Lord, there is so much in your word that we don't understand and we don't see clearly, but reveal to us, show us, make it clear to our hearts and our minds who you are, your character, that we can come before you, we can thank and praise you for the victory won at the cross. We can thank and praise you for your love and your mercy. for your righteousness and your justice. That in you we have complete, true, eternal salvation. Let us be reminded of that every step we take and each day we walk. In Jesus' precious name, amen.